Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me in the studios of CBS Interactive, Fleischmann Hillard's VP of Digital Media, Scott Rohde.
Hey, Tim.
Petra Buchanan, CEO of pay TV body Astra.
Hello, Tim.
And a little bit later, Canon Australia's marketing boss, Craig Manson. This week, Telstra's advertising guru admits the brand has a long way to go and calls in DDB to get him there. Brand Australia, second only to Canada. Pure Blonde's epic journey. Free VB, if Australia wins the Ashes. And Junior MasterChef has a strong finish. Plus, Canon's new master brand strategy. So first we talk to Petra Buchanan from Astra. Thank you very much for joining us. It's probably worth first of all explaining what Astra's remit is.
Sure. Well, we represent subscription television in Australia. So we're the peak industry body. And basically we're promoting awareness and understanding for the investment that subscription television makes, both at a cultural and media and broadcast level.
So I suppose you would almost be seen as the voice of Foxtel and Allstar, but obviously there are other players involved as well.
Yeah, obviously those are the two main platforms that provide the distribution for subscription television in Australia, but obviously then there's a huge plethora of channels. So we represent each of those individual channels that in many instances have numerous channels of their own.
And how much of the role is a marketing role? How much a lobbying role? How do you kind of divide your priorities?
It's very much a hybrid. Anything I think that involves representation and information sharing is very much a marketing role in and of itself. But we obviously have some very clear issues at a regulatory level that we're trying to influence and trying to get some reform going in terms of creating a more level playing field in the broadcast area.
Well, I suspect that this podcast, by the time people listen, it will be Friday morning. We feel painfully close to the anti-siphoning, the word on what's going to happen there. What's on the assumption that by the time we go to air, it's not reached the public domain. What would Astra like to see from it?
Look, fundamentally, it's an interesting piece of legislation because in essence, basically, it is stopping market competition. And so it was set up originally to ensure that the free-to-air networks had a certain amount of rights and access to those sports exclusively at the detriment of any other media entity. And that's grown over the years. And now we find ourselves 15 years into subscription television. And the list is the longest in the world. It's got 1,300 events on it. It balloons out to over 2,000 events when there's an Olympic year. And if you look at a market, say, like the UK, there are, you know, less than 10 events on the list. You can count them on a hand, usually. Same thing in other markets. And then you look at the US and New Zealand, which have no list whatsoever. So in essence, we are seeking reform to try to, you know, normalize that a little bit more so that there can still be the preservation of those big iconic events that every Australian should have access to. But quite honestly, given there's 1,300 events on the list, they're never all aired. And so what happens is that basically it hurts the sport, and it means that a lot of the viewers just don't get to see those programs.
Now, the frustration for viewers is, of course, that they don't want to pay to watch their sport.
Yeah, I mean, there is a big marketing campaign by the free-to-air networks, which are commercial entities in their own right, that change in legislation would mean a removal of some type of viewing opportunities for the general public. But the main argument is actually quite flawed because, in essence, of those 1,300 events, normally about 25% of them actually ever make it to air. So what we're just saying is that's 75%. Put it out into the free market. Allow it to be bid for. Allow it to work in a way that actually helps those sports have a proper, kind of competitive bidding process that means more money can flow back to those sports, back to grassroots, et cetera. So the fact that people could lose out on watching sport is actually a fallacy.
Scott, yeah. You were going to come in.
Yeah, well, I just think I agree that, you know, there's certain sports that need to get more promotion and more help out there. I think, you know, one of the things about Australia is it focuses on four sports pretty much. Then when the Commonwealth Games and Olympics are running around, then it gets focused on them. But apart from that, you know, a lot of the more random sports don't really get a lot of focus at all. And the reason I point this out is that my ex is the president of the Sydney Roller Derby League, which is a massive growing sport in Australia. And in America, it's huge. You know, they run channels on
it. But is it a TV sport? I mean, that sounds more like a live sport.
Imagine British Bulldogs on roller skates type thing.
Yeah, but
it's a TV sport. Yeah, in America, it's got loads. It's shown nationwide in America, you know, and it doesn't get any virtual TV coverage in Australia.
And Petra, one of the things that sort of strikes me from someone who's been in the country about 4 years point of view is the free TV networks seem very, very good at getting their own way with government. You know, we've seen it with the rebates and everything else. Is that a failing of Astra, the fact that you don't seem to have been able to make the case as strongly for favours as free TV has?
Look, I think there's a huge legacy around media in Australia that's rather unique. Obviously, my accent conveys I haven't been here very long either. I've been here 7 years. And having worked in a pay TV environment in the US and internationally, I found it quite interesting coming to Australia and seeing just this ingrained attitude of what is more fundamentally around paying for media generally. You know, there seems to be no issue or at least a challenge insofar as we pay for newspapers, we pay to go to the movies, we'll pay for creative input and access to information. But for some reason, there has been a hold on the free-to-air television space that is quite legacy-driven. And I think that more and more the convergence and the rapid amount of information that's coming into this market is only going to make for savvier consumers. Mm. And so, you know, 34% of the population has access to subscription television presently. That continues to grow at a slow pace, and there's obviously the introduction of more media opportunities.
I was going to ask actually about specifically the rise of the free-to-air digital channels. Mm. You know, we've seen in the space of, I guess, the last 12 months, 7-2, 7-Mate, Go, Gem from Nine. 10 Sports Channel hasn't really taken off yet, but they'll be launching 11 early next year. ABC News 24, etc. So the whole landscape has changed, and that seems to have coincided with a slowdown in the growth of pay TV. Do you see a point where it's almost saturated? You know, that pay TV has gone almost as far as it will in terms of that sort of, you know, into a third of a household, so however many it is.
No, I think what we're seeing is just that the landscape broadly is changing, and people's expectations about how they can get access to things is rapidly changing. You know, you just look at the iPad introduction into this market in the last few months, and by the end of this year, I think they're going to be, although Apple doesn't confirm their numbers, 200,000 or something. And, you know, many more that want to probably purchase that device over Christmas. Mm. So people are now looking at different mechanisms, different ways to consume information. And I think what they're looking for are trusted sources of that content. So reflecting then back into the broadcaster realm, yes, we're seeing more multi-channel channels launching from the mainstream commercial free-to-air entities. But what they are actually doing is replicating what pay TV is all about, which is multi-channels, which is niche programming. And fundamentally and you can see this both in their ratings, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with next year's advertising in the free-to-air environment, is basically they're cannibalizing their own piece of the pie. And so what we see is that, you know, overall media and TV consumption is growing. It's higher than it was, you know, a few years ago. So that interest and that passion for content is only going to increase, I believe.
Scott?
Yeah, well, I was going to say two things. One, obviously on demand is going to help, where people can actually watch a full season of whatever they want. But what I would you say that the cost of the subscription model in Australia is possibly too high, or I'll rephrase that, sorry, the cost of one box is probably fine, but I think that people who want that more, they've got a larger house, everybody wants to watch their own programmes. I mean, I live in a household with three Foxtel IQ2 boxes, and we're paying $170 a month, which is just astronomical, because we pay for the box, but then we have to pay $25 every month just to have the box in the house. You know, and
also sound like a dream household as well.
Sounds like a very early adopter technology based house.
Yeah, it's also got Apple TV and two rooms linked
to
one computer.
Can I come over and play?
Not to mention the 3D TV.
A 3D TV in the downstairs.
There you go.
But we have. You know, I was talking to this to the flatmates the other day. I said, you know, I actually am starting to have an issue with the fact that it causes a problem. We're paying $75 for the boxes we've paid for. But we have to pay that $75 every month to rent that data area, and it's we're actually thinking about just cancelling the service now, because we're at that point where you're thinking, well, is Murdoch ripping us off, you know, for that?
Look, I think I can't.
Minority
obviously,
shareholder Murdoch, obviously.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Look, what I think that we're seeing actually, interestingly, in the data is that those people that have the service, have pay TV and subscription TV in their homes, actually are deepening their engagement with it. So as you say, you've got three, I've got two in my house, you know, and we're seeing an uptake of that multi-room device. We're also seeing an uptake in, because there's tiering levels, obviously, in the way that you can purchase the subscription, and we're seeing an uptake in HD and all of those kind of content. And a corollary to that, though, is if you looked at sort of a per user, and we were looking at the dynamics of this in terms of from a funding level, the content and the investment that the industry is making in terms of that exclusivity, that original content, things like launching a new 3D dedicated channel, which launched on the 1st of November.
Haven't seen much on. Still like, yeah,
well, there's
nothing.
Not the content yet, is
there? I know. I'm like waiting.
And that's why it's one channel rather than, you know, a plethora of channels. And it'll be interesting to see if that goes the way of HD or is a bit different. Mm. And I think, the jury's still out on that one. But I think what is important is that we are a smaller market than markets, say, the US or the UK. So there is an economy of scale issue. And I think also the regulatory environment means that there are constraints on the growth of the industry that mean that everyone that participates probably, you know, has to pay a little bit more than if it was more widely subscribed to. That said, though, the industry is making huge investments in the content. I mean, I talk, you know, almost daily with channel heads, creative directors, marketing people. They are so passionate about the content that they're bringing to air.
And you did something of a survey on the value of that investment
we
as
did.
Well. What were the top lines from that?
Well, the top line is rather interesting. The survey data was for 2009 and looked at total investment in original Australian production. So this is exclusive of international content, etc. And that was over $500 million that the industry is collectively spending, which is a significant investment.
What was that number again?
Over $500 million.
Right, okay. Yeah, so quite large numbers.
It's really significant when you're looking at what that means in terms of money going to production houses, money going to employ people, all of those factors that make for a robust creative industry in this country.
And speaking of producers, it was SPAR, the Screen Producers Association of Australia's conference this week. Mm-hmm. You went along to some of that. What were the main messages you took from that?
Look, I've been to a couple sessions. It's still on. But I think that creative spark and that desire to make great product is still very much alive. There's always going to be an issue of funding. And I think the independent sector is always going to try to ensure that people understand that and that they can get the greatest inputs as possible. So there's obviously charges in that area. But what you're seeing is just continued innovation, great creative people. And that's fundamentally what makes all of us want to sit down and watch TV at night.
And your own conference next year also, the focus is on content at that as well.
Very much so. So, you know, we live in this really converged environment. I was talking about the iPad earlier. There's mobile devices, you name it. We want it in different ways, and none of us want it in the same way. You know, we're all unique in that regard. So, you know, fast forward 8 years down the track, there's NBN, there's all of these different things. well, what fundamentally matters is what you can watch on these devices. How do you engage with it? What is the content? And so I think that while we need to keep focused on the technology, the innovation, the investment to keep ensuring that Australia is productive, inclusive, and a growing, you know, segment in this regard, we need to just make sure that there's just great content available, though, too, that feeds all those unique requirements that people have.
Well, Petra, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you.
Next, we talk a new marketing strategy for Canon. Also with us today is Craig Manson, who revels in the job title of Director Canon Business Imaging, short version being that he runs Canon Australia's marketing activities. Now, this month saw a new strategy, with Canon announcing a new master brand campaign. Craig, what's the plan? And also, have I described your job correctly as well?
Kind of. I used to run marketing. Now I run the business division, so. But I'll take it.
Now, let's talk about the new strategy of sort of having an overall message for the master brand.
So the master brand piece for us is we feel we've been absent for a while around master brand. We've had fantastic sub-brand strategies. We've had fantastic sub-brand campaigns. And we really wanted to deliver master brand right, as an umbrella right across all the sub-brands.
And which are the key sub-brands?
So we've got Pixma, EOS, and very not well-known as Image Runner, and another one called MDS. They're the business ones, second.
Okay, so what's the kind of thinking and strategy behind doing this then?
So the piece for us saying Canon represents so much, and we've talked about technology for a long time. We've actually had a tagline of advanced simplicity. And that's, we wanted to go to a far more evocative place, I guess, and we wanted to say, what does Canon actually mean to the customers and the consumers? And the key outtake for us was we want to talk about outcomes. You can talk about technology all day, right? But for us, what do our customers and consumers want to achieve? And that's where we're heading.
And for consumers at the moment, are there changes you want to make to current perception versus where you want to take them?
It's not a change to perception. To me, it's a change to how we communicate that. Because around the sub-brands, we're very, very clear. But across the master brand, we haven't been so much. So the sub-brands have taken us very much down a more emotional channel, whereas the master brand has been so rational with advanced simplicity. And it was, to me, it wasn't matching. So to go to a more evocative statement proposition is far more real.
And what are the kind of big challenges in the sector generally? You know, because I guess it's one of those things, the technology changes quite fast, price probably changes quite fast as well. What are the issues that you kind of grapple with?
Price and technology then. So the market moves incredibly quickly. The thing for us is just making sure we're communicating effectively with our consumers and our customers. And again, that's why we're talking about outcomes rather than product, because product's going to keep moving, right? And that's very interesting for people. But it's what they do with those changes, which we think is far more interesting. And our research with our customers, it's far more interesting for them as well.
And in recent months, what are you kind of happy with in terms of sort of marketing drives that you've been doing? You know, there's been a fair bit of talk about around the EOS, for instance.
Yeah, we're having a great time with EOS. We picked up the Grand Prix in Cannes this year, so we're pretty happy about that, obviously. We're loving the new advertising campaign.
Now, for people who aren't familiar with it, maybe you can talk us through it.
Which part?
The bit that picked up the Grand Prix was picture chains.
Yes, photo chains.
Yeah, yes. Photo yep. chains, yep. yes.
Yeah, so basically what we did is we created an online community of EOS users or consumers, and we really engaged with them about how to create better photography by using the camera. And the consumers love it. The amount of coverage we get, we're creating competitions, activities, a whole community that just celebrates around the power of an image, I guess.
Yeah, your social strategy has been really quite smart.
Yeah, it's been bang on.
Mm.
What was the social strategy?
Just to build that community, actually get people involved and, you know, get them engaging with a brand. You know, it's one of the few brands in Australia that are actually doing it really well at the moment.
And where did the initial idea and drive come from? Did that come out of the marketing team or come out of the agency? Or?
That came out of research, and it came out of the big idea from the agency. So,
and yeah. The key agencies you work with on the consumer side, it's Leo Burnett.
Correct.
What do you see as their strengths? What makes you want to work with them?
They're really engaging with us, and they're really, one of our key brand values is bravery, right? and we're seeking, we're challenging our agencies to do some brave stuff. World of EOS was a brave thing to do. I mean, no one had done it, right? You create a community and it beat a social media. Is it going to work? Being a corporate guy, is it going to actually return me an investment?
And did it feel like a risk at the time then?
Yeah, it did. But it came through in spades, and it's been just fantastic for us.
And on the business side, the agency you work with there?
It is Ballantyne Taylor, out of New Zealand.
And tell me about their work.
So we never really had a business agency, and so we challenged ourselves late last year to appoint an agency and went through the full process, as you do. And we've had a lot of experience with Ballantyne's over the years in different parts of our businesses. And we just needed to, get back into the market, a bit like the master brand. We've been a little bit absent. So we've gone out with a really bold, really brash series of campaigns, and it's working for us. It's actually getting us noticed in the market, and we're about to launch phase two of that early in 2011.
Now, for a lot of brands, this sort of the 2 month run up to Christmas is that sort of crucial stage. Is that true for Canon?
Yes, it is. You get a big run pre-Christmas in the consumer part of the business. That's really interesting. You know, we're so wide in what we do that we have so many different peaks throughout the year for different places. But for cameras, for digital SLRs and compact cameras and video cameras, this is it. We're in the zone now.
And what's in place?
So we're taking a really bullish approach to Christmas. We think the market's... Yeah, it's a little bit flat, and so we want to be absolutely progressive in what we're doing. We've got a fantastic consumer campaign where you can win a seat on a jet plane that's going to go around Australia, and we'll do some creative photographic things, and we'll have a good time. So that's pretty exciting.
So it's all about engaging photographers again.
Yeah, it's about saying, you know, get the gear, and then we'll engage you post-purchase to actually really get you excited and interested in what you're doing.
And which of your competitors do you see as doing interesting things?
None of them. Did you like that?
I'm actually going to agree with you. At the moment, I don't see any other main consumer brands in that space doing anything that's really doing what Canon does. You know, I tend to keep my ear to the ground with most campaigns and that kind of, in the social arena and in the PR arena, and I don't really think anybody's doing anything like you guys are doing. And that's, I'm not blowing smoke up your arse, but I'm just being honest.
I'm glad you're not doing that.
Yeah.
where do you see the main competition coming from? You know, because you must keep an eye on where the challenges are.
Yeah, look, we've got lots of competitors across the consumer electronics space and also the business space. In the consumer electronics space, I just don't think they're doing anything interesting. And we're actively going out of our way to put ourselves on the edge of that continually, and you always staying ahead of that as well. In the business space, we think we're going down a track around this thing called managed document services. And we know we're really taking a leading edge down that space as well. So we're really trying to push our boundaries. And to be honest, it's painful internally because you're really challenging yourself continually. But that just builds a fantastic culture as well.
Well, thanks very much for joining us, Craig.
Thank you for having me.
Next, we focus on another brand with a tough challenge, Telstra. Now, speaking on the panel at Mumbrella's last Sydney Question Time, Telstra creative boss Mark Collis pledged that Telstra would be the best advertiser in Australia, but he also conceded that the brand still had a long way to go.
And what of Telstra's output are you proud of recently?
Telstra's? None in particular. I think we've got a long way to go as an advertiser. So I'm treating it as business as usual for the time being, but I'm going to make it the best client in the country, so that's my ambition.
And this week, Mark Collis switched from Ogilvy to DDB as the agency to take him on that journey with the brand element of what Telstra does. There's still lots of other agencies on the roster as well. Scott, what do you make of the state of Telstra's advertising?
Honestly, terrible, I think, especially the latest run with the guys and the tea hub or the tea box or the tea whatever. You know, it's they're not inspiring to make you go out and want to get it. They just seem like a bit of crap, to be honest. And I find most of their advertising just doesn't seem to hit the spot, which is bizarre because ever since I moved from, you know, the fact is I moved from Optus to Telstra earlier in the year, and I've never been happier with my service. And the service I get from Telstra on my mobile is phenomenal. And I tell everybody, you know, move to Telstra.
You're on the next G.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the service I get is just superb. And I think that their adverts miss that, and their home adverts miss that as well. You know, they're too complex, or too, they're trying to be either be too funny or too serious. I just feel like they're missing the mark continually. Funnily enough, I watched one of the Apple adverts on TV the other night during MasterChef. I think it was MasterChef, and one of the Apple adverts came on the new, whatever it's called, that Apple Air, I think it was. And it literally was, you know, the camera panned along, saw the product, opened it up, and that was it. That's the advert.
It's a beautiful product, though.
It's a beautiful product, you know, and but you don't really get to see the Telstra products and these adverts.
Isn't that, with a lot of technology, though, isn't that some of the problem? It's actually hard to communicate. We're actually pretty fast, for instance.
Yeah.
Particularly when, you know, you if you overclaim, then you find yourselves
falling foul of the ACCC,
or, you know, all of those things. And something like, you know, Next G doesn't quite cover the whole country.
Yeah, but I think irreverency in an advert doesn't help. And I think a lot of their current adverts, and maybe the changeover is going to, you know, do the right thing. And at least he's, you know, standing there and saying, do you know what? It's not that great at the moment. Let's change that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be some time as well, because lots of agencies involved, lots, you know, we seem to be talking about sub-brands a lot today, but lots of sub-brands too.
And it's a massive organisation, you know, and, you know, you can't please everyone all the time. And it's one of those, it's funny, it's one of those committee things, I guess, where, you know, everybody gets involved, and the advert that probably comes out of the end is a churned up piece of crap.
Well, next, how Australia moved up the global brand chart. So according to FutureBrand, Australia as a global brand has climbed from fourth to second on the top 25 list. Scott, wearing your PR hat, I suppose, there's some fairly tough challenges of marketing a country.
Yeah. Yes, there is. This is one of those ones I'm kind of always baffled by. Whenever I see these little surveys come out, and, you know, these results, and you kind of look at them, you go, well, really? Is this it? Is this people now more talking about Australia than the UK? You know, it's a bit bizarre. I mean, how are they managing it? How are they getting the results from it?
Well, they're looking at levels of awareness. I'm glad you asked. I have
Thank
the story
very much.
Here
That's
in front
right.
of me.
I was waiting for you filling out that bit of paper.
Levels of awareness, familiarity, preference, consideration, advocacy, active decisions to visit, associations and attributes. So those are the kind of criteria they're scoring
and
about.
Are the surveys done with an exact same group of people in every country?
I don't know the answer to that question. One would assume that they have a common methodology because it's a global company.
And then I would also say, I mean, obviously, I think that Australia's gone up. Could be because of the Oprah Winfrey campaign.
Early, possibly a bit early for that. Yeah,
was it
sure? Yeah.
Well, it was announced three months ago.
But they're going. It's not, the visit hasn't happened.
Oh, okay.
The programs haven't happened, obviously.
But so they've got global coverage that was happening. So I don't know if that helped.
What do you, as a consumer, what do you associate with Canada, which was number one? What are your brand associations for Canada?
Was it Winter Olympics were held there?
Calgary, long time ago now.
Yeah,
but that shows the power of the Olympics.
It's a cold country.
Nice people, though.
Lovely people. I spent a month in Toronto. It was fantastic. I love Canada.
No, I had a good time in Calgary, actually. Very nice people. Slightly boring.
Yeah. Great food, though. Find the food. And there's a restaurant in Toronto called Le Marché, which I would tell everybody to avoid.
And, duly noted. Number three, New Zealand.
It's a lovely place, never been.
Really?
Sorry, Georgie. The producer of the show is Kiwi.
Georgie, our producer, is looking disgusted.
I've never been, but I will be there next year, and I'm looking forward to it. I hear it's a bit like Scotland, so I'm sure I'll love it.
Number four, the United States.
Never been.
But you know, yes, you don't have to have been there to have some sort of feeling about the brand. You are familiar with the concept of a country called the United States.
I am familiar with the United States. I am aware of it. My opinion of the US, inability for the middle of the entire country to understand what a government is, or at least vote on the right one.
Brand United States, what does it stand for?
It stands for terrorism, it stands for issues with people, it stands for retraction of privacy. Do you want me to keep going on?
No.
Good TV shows, though.
Number five, Switzerland.
Alps, Toblerone.
Number six, Japan.
Technology.
Number seven, France.
I guess wine, but I don't drink it, and a bunch of annoying people.
Finland.
Awesome vodka.
United Kingdom.
Brilliant, home.
That's number nine. But come on, what does Brand United Kingdom stand for? Which actually is down one this year.
Honestly, yeah. Tory Party, total mess.
Yeah, but do you think that's what world consumers think about?
No, world consumers think of Britain as the royal family. They think of it as obviously next year that'll go up with the royal wedding and the gold.
Well, this is. Do you think this will be big for British tourism?
The reason they keep the royal family there, as far as I'm aware, is because they bring in a lot of tourism to the country. People want to visit the royal family and stand outside Buckingham Palace and maybe see the Queen. Have you stood outside Buckingham Palace?
Have I stood outside? But I've been past Buckingham Palace. Yes, of course I have.
Yeah. Have you went into it?
Have I been into Buckingham Palace? Let's have a think. No, I think even wearing my journalist head, I don't think I ever did.
I once got a Secret Service. I have chats with me when we followed the Queen Mother around before she died. It was part of a Sun journal. That was an interesting day.
So were you actually arrested?
No, we were put on the bonnets of our car, though, and quite terrifyingly, held down, and we were told, what are you doing watching the Queen Mother, and who are you? And then we had tried to get our press cards out, and then they were phoning our bosses up, and quite serious stuff.
We've gone a long way from Brand Australia in that little conversation. Next is the summer, and the battle for beer ascendancy is on. Scott, what do you think so far?
I think the advert's wishy-washy. I don't really think it does anything at all.
I think you're wrong.
What I'll say is that I've drank Pure Blonde and I think it's disgusting. And that's being honest. I have drank Pure Blonde White, however. I was at the launch party last week and Pure Blonde White's actually quite nice. It's not as good as, say, Hoegaarden or something like that, one of the wheat beers it's trying to emulate. But it's way better than Pure Blonde.
But don't forget, in terms of the advertising, they can only advertise the product. You know,
I know.
They can't make the product taste nicer.
No, I know it can, but I just felt, I don't know, that teaser I didn't like.
I liked it. I thought it was funny. I thought it didn't take itself too seriously.
But that's the problem. Virtually no beer ad anymore does. They all feel very similar. It's all this guy, that guy. It's your average guy. It just feels like they're all going down one corridor and, you know, there's no end in sight.
Well, I look forward to seeing the final full ad. VB that is doing its own thing as well with free beer to the nation if Australia wins the Ashes. So a beer voucher for everybody in News Limited Papers. With what it claims to be an unprecedented giveaway, you're actually scowling.
Scott. I am scowling, sorry. my most hated beer with my most hated newspaper group.
But again, the hated beer, about the taste
of
the
beer. No, I know. Look, I actually have maybe a problem with the fact that alcohol to every adult is kind of worrying, to be perfectly honest. I think that's a really, really bad PR message. I even noticed on the forums people were saying that you've got, was it Ricky Ponting? One of the team was a former alcoholic?
I don't think he was actually an alcoholic, but had alcohol problems.
Yeah, had alcohol problems, you know. And, you know, you've got a whole generation and you're bringing it up to say, you know, hey, free paper, free beer, go for it. And I enjoy a drink, you may have noticed. But I don't think that...
But you're scared that the one can of VB might tip you over the edge.
Well, it would just make me stop drinking beer if it tastes that bad. I think giving away... And it's actually not a free beer for every Australian. It's a free beer for every Australian who buys the newspaper.
Yeah.
So it's not actually a free beer for every Australian. It's, if you want to look at it in a full sense...
Yes, to me, it seems like a good strategy, though. They've had some good PR at it. There's a good conversation around it.
Do you know what? You can do some good PR around the product. I just may not happen to like the product or the way they're doing it.
Well, next, Junior MasterChef goes out with a bang. In TV, it's nearly the end of the rating season. 10's finale of Junior MasterChef stormed to the finish with an average of 1.9 million viewers and a peak at the right side of 2 million, winning its time slot for the night pretty easily. Rafters bowed out with just over 2.1 million. And Iron Chef has fallen below 1 million. So we're nearly there for the TV ratings year. It's looking like it's going to be narrowly 7's year over 9. Been another year of improved performance for 10. Scott, your feelings about the year's telly?
Yeah, it's been all right. not going to. I can't rave about it. I actually enjoyed some of Junior MasterChef. I've got to admit, I was kind of. I thought the young lad should have won it. I just liked his ability to kind of keep pushing through with new ideas. And
Tasmanian lad Jack, I think his
name
was.
Yeah, Jack, that's right, yeah.
And Isabella was the winner.
But no, I mean, what can I say? It's been, I've enjoyed the programmes that I've been watching. Not always on free-to-air, not always on, paid subscription. I use a VPN over to the US and watch Hulu sometimes. Be able to get the TV shows a lot quicker. It's TV. There's some great shows out there, and I think every year some of the shows are getting better, but there's a lot of shows that are getting a lot worse. And I think one of the problems that the TV companies need to realise is that they need to really invest a little bit more in some of the shows that they don't think are working at the beginning, and really try and help them grow.
Well, in fairness, there is the investment, but sometimes it doesn't pay off. I mean, Iron Chef is a classic example. Yeah. You know, that's regardless of whether you like the fact that they took an original format and Australianised it, you know, the fact that it's doing less than a million won't be what they want.
No.
They'll be disappointed with X Factor. The investment's happening, but, you know, the frustration must be those days when there's two or three bits of local content and 2.5 Men is the top show for the night.
Yeah, that's depressing entirely. Every day I get depressed about whenever I see or hear people talking about 2.5 Men.
But doesn't that then make us self-important elitists when we talk about all the quality of television? You know, because Nine, with its 2.5 Men and its populist format, Tim, delivers good ratings.
You described yourself as a popular elitist tons of times to me.
Yeah, but absolutely. But what I'm getting at is,
your comment, you know, we're being
snobs. The average people want American sitcoms, and Nine delivers them.
But I enjoy. I like How I Met Your Mother. I think that's a great show. I can't stand 2.5 Men. I love Chuck, a TV show, and it's the same guy that created Chuck created 2.5 Men.
But Chuck doesn't rate.
Doesn't rate at all. It rates okay in the US, but it's only getting a few million viewers in the US. And it's one of those things that some good shows die out, and, you know.
A few old favourites coming back as well. Nine announced this week the return of This Is Your Life, hosted by Eddie Maguire.
Oh, God. That's all I'm going to say to that. I always get flashbacks to watching that when I was a kid in the UK, as there was nothing else on.
Well, that is all that we have time for today. Thank you to our co-host, Scott Rohde.
Thanks, Tim. Nice to see you.
And to our guests earlier, Petra and to Craig. Thank you also to CBS for use of their studios. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.